We were walking back from the store, and what did I say to her? I said, your shoelace is unplugged. Which is, you know,
not the right words.
It's adjacent to my meaning. Hello, Patreon listeners.
Hello.
Goodbye.
Not quite goodbye. We're here to talk about episode 3 and 4 of The New Pope. Are you ready?
I think so.
Is this how far you've gotten in this show? Because
this is, yeah, because no, it's gonna take me. I'm gonna have to, like, force myself not to watch other garbage.
And watch this garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Because it's been a long time since we recorded episode 1 and 2. And I have now seen the whole show a while ago, so I actually had to go and, like, refresh myself before we could talk about this.
My bad.
I take notes, like, tons of notes while I watch this damn show, so we're pretty okay, hopefully. And the first note I have here is that, you know, the opening dancing song at this point was very, very Technicolor in episode 3. And I guess when I was watching it, my dog was way into it, because I just have that in my notes, like, patches. And I've seen that before. There's been a couple moments in time where we've watched TV shows and all of a sudden he'll just be staring at the screen and kind of doing that little, like, ooh, ooh, with his head. Like, it just kind of bobbles a little bit.
And that was one of them.
Oh, totally. Yeah. The best example I have was when I was watching that Netflix series on Commodus, the Roman Emperor, and they were having a gladiator fight. And I have a video of Patch just so into it. He's like,
oh, I remember that. Yeah.
So he was doing that about the Technicolor flashy nuns, apparently.
Well, and then they slightly changed it because that was more the one where they were dancing in their bedroom and not the one where they were entirely dancing in front of the cross flash dance style, which is the other one. They, like, seem to switch back and forth.
It escalates. Having seen all the episodes now, it, like, escalates over time, so.
Oh, okay, so it's supposed to be kind of like a progressive, like, music video thing is what they're going for?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, they're definitely making some commentary there for sure. There is this, actually, while we're on that, because we'll jump into it right away, there is this scene that they have escalating at the beginning, and then they have the scenes at the end where they have weird people dancing.
Yeah, just random characters doing dances.
Yeah, so that's something we can comment on each episode, is, like, the weird escalation of the opening credits before it shifts into something completely different, and then who's doing the dancing at the end. So we'll get there. Right off the bat, this episode starts with John Brannix, and he's gonna go basically leave and come to Rome and potentially be the Pope. And he talks about he's going to take one of his dogs and the box. And I found that even though it's pretty clear what's in the box, I just have throughout my notes in different scenes, every time the box comes up, I just wrote, what's in the box, John?
What's in the box?
What's in the box, John? And then he's talking and he clearly thinks Sophie is so wonderful.
God, he's got a little chub for her. For French fries and hamburgers.
He definitely has a little chub for French fries. And then there's this moment, and I just, it hurt my soul a little bit because he's getting a phone call from Meghan Markle.
Yeah, about her outfit or something.
About beauty tips. And he's like, what a nuisance. And I know that this was written before the whole Megxit thing started happening, but watching it, you're just like, oh, it just hurts your soul a little bit, so.
It's really bad. Mm. I mean, watching this now, like, right now, like, yesterday, so there's a lot of things that kind of hurt me. That was one of them, the Meghan Markle thing. The other thing was the whole, like, I guess we'll talk about that later. Anyway.
We'll get there. Then there's some stuff with the nuns, and then we come up to Esther, and she's being removed from the house that she was living in rent-free, because clearly this woman is still trying to live off her connection to the previous Pope and her miracles.
Did we skip over the part where they were talking about meeting Marilyn Manson and John Malkovich exists as John Malkovich in real life?
That's, like, right after this, so we could just jump to that, because okay. I don't have anything to say about Esther at this point. They tell her she needs another miracle, and she's just obnoxious, and I hate her. So, yeah, there's this moment where he's having all these parallels between John and Sophie. They're, like, doing their perfume, and then they're talking. And she says, oh yeah, you remind me of my favorite actor, John Malkovich. And he goes, he doesn't do anything for me. Har, har. That's just...
It was bad. It was a bad joke. It was really awful. John Malkovich plays himself in a lot of things.
He's always playing himself in some version of that. So that was, yeah. And he's talking about wanting to meet Sharon Stone and Marilyn Manson because they seem free, which is an interesting statement. And some foreshadowing, I suppose. But yeah, the whole, he doesn't do much for me, just... There's another one of those moments that hurt me a little bit.
The man who writes this needs to go to jail. If there's, like, a writing jail, like, not a real jail, just, like, you've done a bad with your stringing of words together and concepts.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, there... I definitely have some qualms with this man, so... She also asks him if he's gay, and he just laughs at her. And this is one thing I have to say. I'm really appreciative of Paolo for not just making him gay, because considering the tone of the show, and we've already talked about this a fair bit in the previous season, how incredibly frustrating a lot of the presentation of homosexuality in the church was. I'm just glad that that is not something that's going to be a factor in this season, so... And then we get some lovely tragedy happening with a massacre in Somalia where nuns and priests are watching a film. And it's just, this becomes also a motif that we're going to see throughout the show, is these like terrible moments of terrorism that are going to kind of pepper the storyline. And we'll get to the point in which that comes to a culmination, but it is very just, there'll be a scenes and then this thing will just happen. And then they just won't particularly respond to it very well. Like, this is where John says he doesn't feel devastated by the attack. It's just sort of like, there's a disattachment. And there's meant to be this disattachment from these horrible things that are happening. And anyways, he has this moment with Gutierrez afterwards. And Gutierrez clearly has reservations about Brannix, but he doesn't want to say that outright. And Brannix says, I should like to be your friend. And our beautiful Bernardo Gutierrez, like, it would be an honor and a pleasure for me. He is a precious, precious cinnamon roll still. And I adore him. And then I don't have it in my notes exactly how it comes up, but he starts talking about his relationship with his parents. And this is, again, parents is a huge thing. I wonder what's going on with Paolo Sorrentino.
This is a new type of absent parent. It's not the same sort of absent parent we saw in the first series, but it is a similar absentee parenting scheme.
It's very odd. He talks about how his parents wanted the religious career for his brother, told him he wouldn't amount to anything. And he does have, clearly, a more conflicted upbringing. We don't know why they're so awful yet. He's trying to express that he has this very complex relationship with his family, and it clearly has to do with his brother. And he even visits his parents at one point and tells them that he might be the next pope, even though they had clearly thought that that was going to be his brother's destiny. When he's talking to his parents, he says, like, you will be condemned to be proud of me, because he's going down that path whether they like it or not. His dad tells him that God doesn't like him, and he yells at them about how he's forsaken himself for them, and he'll do it now for all of the Catholics, because he's like, look, I have lived without this sense of self-love or without this adoration from family. I shall now live my life in the service of the church and its people, hoping to receive the first time an ounce of affection. And I can be Pope because I know how to endure suffering. And then he comes to confess at Adam's grave, and we see Pius hanging out. He says, God didn't like me either because God's love is not given. Pius is just creeping again.
Gonna creep and smell his ghost.
There's gonna be some sniffs.
Can't sniff now. Social distancing.
Thank goodness. The next morning, he tells the cardinals that he is declining to be their candidate for Pope because, despite appearances, I am not equal to the task. So he's not up for it, basically, or at least he's making it seem as if, oh, he's not up for it. And this becomes a conflict for them, right? Because they need a candidate who's going to, well, Foiello would like one that he can control, and the Cardinals, and Sophie are saying, well, why don't you just let your rival Hernandez be Pope? But Voiello's like, no, look, we cannot have somebody who's involved in the sex abuse scandals, which, good on him, he is doing that. But Voiello decides he's going to call Brannix's bluff. And he meets with Brannix and thanks him, tells him they've got everything worked out, that another candidate has come up, and it's a Norman bishop, and it's all going to be fine. Thanks for your time, kind of thing. And they go to leave, and the bluff is called, and John decides, oh, hey, maybe I will go for it. Maybe I actually want this in my life. And it turns out that this new candidate that had arrived is somebody who's been dead for a long time. The bluff worked. And then we go back to Rome, and we have Francis II's funeral, and I just wrote, much sad face. Because really, if this show had all been about Francis II, it would have been a way better show. I just kept going through this entire season going, but Francis II, but Francis II, why not Francis II? And it's cool here because we get to see the death ritual where they knock on the dead Pope's head with a hammer.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Is there precedent for a Pope who was, like, maybe not dead?
There are definitely precedents for it. And we're going to do a whole episode on papal death one day, so I'm not going to spoil anything for you now, because it's definitely a topic that I have in the back of my mind. We will talk about why they do this thing, and what the symbolism is, and why the ritual's there, so it is a thing, definitely. And it's good that it surprised you, because then it gives us more to talk about.
The hand, yeah, just like, let's not hit the Pope on the head. Please.
Oh, they do, and they hit him 3 times, because they have to be like, hello!
Is the reception working?
Hello, are you awake? Are you sleeping? It's great. And then we're back to Esther, and she's...
Well, she's having a birthday party for Pius, and then this fucking Lederhosen man shows up.
And he's the worst.
He's terrible. He's the absolute worst.
We're gonna get to it. I hate him so much, so moving away from him, because then, you know, we have another conclave happen, we have John Brannix elected to the papacy with all but one vote. There's one vote for Lenny Bilardo, because somebody's an asshole! And so he becomes John Paul III. We already kind of knew that because, it was all over the advertisements for the show before the show came out that he was going to be John Paul III. He gets out there and he addresses the crowds at the Vatican very casually. You know, he says, I don't have the answers. I don't know. This is why I want to learn. Let's learn together. He talks about the beauty of family and the strive to eliminate prejudices. You know, he says the church needs only to protect the fragile, and wherever there's fragility, there is a church. And he's got this, compared to someone like Pius, his approach is very gentle. And compared to someone like Francis too, his approach is very, like, calm and collected. And we can see that this is what the church is looking for in a candidate like him. So there's a lot of commentary there. And I actually quite like his approach, especially as time goes on. This idea of the middle way that continues to be associated with him. We'll have lots to talk about. But then, you know, we go back to Esther and Creepy Man. His name's Fabiano, but he is Creepy Man. And I don't really want to deal with him other than to call him Creepy Man, because he's...
Oh my gosh, okay. Imagine, if you will, for a moment, a Ken doll, and now take all of the bad parts of a Ken doll.
And any charm or anything you could imbue upon a doll, get rid of it all.
No, just get rid of anything that you thought was okay about Ken. Make it a nightmare Ken.
I hate him. Like, he gives off just all of the wrong vibes, and it's terrible. And they're already sleeping together, and she wants to, like, move in with him when she gets kicked out. But, like, they literally just met, and I just wrote, Esther kind of sucks.
Esther, you can't sleep with a man and then be like, hey, so I'm getting kicked out of my house.
I mean, he is the perfect kind of man who would take advantage of that situation. So that's a thing that's going to happen. And then we have this subplot come in about the nuns. And this is really interesting because this is definitely reflection and social commentary of what's going on in the world in terms of women in the church and their role in the church. Like, it starts very simple. One of the sisters, Sister Lisette, her mother has cancer. And she's dying and she wants to go to Lourdes with her daughter and they need money. I can't remember. It's like 200 euros, 300 euros. It's a pittance of amount of money. But they come to meet with the bishop overseeing their cloister, and it's Voiello's right-hand man, Don Cavallo, who's also a super creepy dude. And he's, like, prevaricating all over them. He's like, look, no, we don't have the money for that. That's an extravagant expense. This is ridiculous. Like, he's very dismissive of these women, even though they're like, hey, but Cardinal Spoleta's driving a new Bentley. And he's just like, I am unmoved by you. He doesn't even pass on their message to Voiello, who they actually want to talk to. He's just like, ah, whatever, it's just these women. Wash our clothes, the kind of thing. And they keep trying to get to Voiello. And Voiello's doing his thing, walking through the garden. He finds a migrant who's still living in the gardens from when Francis II opened the doors to everybody. But even then, he's like, when the nuns are trying to call to him, he's like, nah, whatever. I don't want to deal with them. They're women. It's very just, the whole thing is super, super dismissive and awful. And then there's a papal photo shoot. And it's very extravagant. It's not sexy and I know it level of extravagant, but he does ask, what, no nudes at one point? And I was like, if that had happened in any capacity, it would have just taken this over the edge in all of the wrong ways. But just him asking that as, like, a cheeky asshole is perfect. And then we have his address to the cardinals. And he talks in this address mostly about this idea of the distortions of the ability to love, right? Like, all the problems in the world boil down to love. It's not the cult of pious, it's not the crisis of Islam, it's not violence, it's not business. They're all different forms of hysterias of love. And this is a really, really beautiful idea. When I sat and listened to it, he's asking, how are we to love? Like, how do we prevent ourselves from getting wrapped up in these distortions of love? And he talks about tenderness without passion, because passion is the enemy of humility. He says, our judgment is clouded by passions that consume us. We give love a concreteness that causes pain to ourselves and others. Replace concrete love with tenderness. Only God knows how right and necessary it is for the church to be unified. So, big takeaway here. He could not be more different than Pius.
Absolutely.
This is a man who was like, fuck all of you. You know, we're going to cut ourselves off from the world. We're going to be fire and brimstone. And then there's JP3 who's like, tenderness. Love. Real love. No concreteness, and it's very abstract and flowery and gentle and fragile. And it's so nice, because I just really hated Pius. And then we come back to Esther, and this is kind of, I guess, where the episode kind of ends, with this whole conception of what's happening with Esther. And she's presented with this opportunity that there's a very, very wealthy woman who has a son with physical deformities. And Esther's like, oh, okay. And she shows up intending to be a caregiver, but what's definitely wanted is a prostitute. And this is, oh God, I hated it. And it's all set up by creepy dude.
And then he was very upset with her.
Yeah, because she decides, there's two scenes happening in conjunction here. The migrant who's living in the shed in the garden meets one of the nuns, and they're having this passionate moment. And then there's Esther, who decides she's gonna go for it and sleep with this deformed boy who has, like, the werewolf syndrome. And both of these scenes are playing out to Ave Maria.
Gentle Ave Maria.
And it's terrible and awful. And this is where I started writing to you going, what the fuck, Fry? What the fuck? Because I hated everything about it. And Faisal, who is the boy in the garden, and Esther, both at different points in the scene, bail out of what they're doing. You know, they felt the awkwardness and they run away. The ending scene is the one nun getting a tattoo on her back of a nun that's, like, rising up. And it's like, oh, these women, they don't want to be dismissed anymore. Something's coming of that. And then that's the end of the episode. And the people who are dancing are the creepy man and Esther. And it's awkward because I hate both of them and, you know, not working for me. So then, episode 4. This episode starts on a completely different note, because we have the Pope meeting Marilyn Manson.
Marilyn Manson has turned into, like, a blobfish.
He is a blobfish. I wrote down Marilyn Manson really needs help with his lipstick because it was, like, all over the place.
No, it's like someone pulled him out of the sea too fast.
Yeah, he is a blobfish, and it's like smudged and terrible, and I'm really bad with lipstick, but even I can help him with that. And it turns out that Manson's super confused and thinks that he's Pius.
Like, agreed to see Pius.
Yeah, and he's like, he asks JP if he's gone to visit Pius, which he hasn't. And then we get our opening credits. And this is where we really start to see the escalation, because I have written, the nuns are now strippers with lots of pole dance and stripper moves. There was, like, the leg over the head while laying down. It was all, like, very classic pole dance stripper moves. It was kind of inflected before. Oh, it was meant to be kind of overtly sexual without being sexual, and now they are strippers.
Yeah, they just leaned into that skin. I feel like they really should have had a more broad spectrum of dancing nuns. If you're going to lean into the dancing nuns, I need at least a couple, you know, homelier looking ones, maybe a few old women. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, yes, you're looking for your diversity in your body types and representations. And I mean, they do have the Mother Superior, who is a little person, but she's not involved in the dancing scene.
No, I need her to be dancing is what I would like. God, I really love her voice.
She's great. I actually really like all of these nuns as characters.
But if that lady does audiobooks, I would just listen to her all day. I love all of the way that sound moves through her vocal cords. It is great.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to have to go back and listen now because I don't think I was that struck by it. But now with that kind of glowing praise, I love all the ways that sound move through her vocal cords. Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and check that. Well, on that highly, bizarrely suggestive commentary, JP is meeting with the Cardinals, and he starts addressing the sexual abuse scandal in a lot of metaphor. They talk about picking flowers, ripping up plants, scorching the earth.
Our boy gets a sexy text.
Which boy?
What's his name? Gutierrez?
Oh, yes, yes.
Bernardo. He gets a sexy text.
Does get a sexy text. Remember when you're like, I hope that Bernardo stays a perfect cinnamon roll? I had literally just finished watching this episode and went, well, he still is.
He's got feelings.
He does. And you know what? Of all the people to have feelings, I'm happy for him. But this meeting with the Cardinals about the sexual abuse scandal is, I don't want to say refreshing, because it's still very gentle. Whereas, you know, in my opinion about the actual church, it needs to be a lot more aggressive. But it is definitely different than Pius, who was just going to ignore it all.
Yeah, and yell about gay people.
Yeah. Yeah, JP3 is not doing that. He talks about Jesus being civility. The church must not abandon their children if they are ill. So he's talking about the people who are committing these crimes. So he's talking about not abandoning them, but distancing from the heart of ecclesiastical life forever. And then, I don't even remember what the next scene is right here, because I just wrote, Sophie and her husband, they're gross and sexual all the time.
Oh, so, I don't know, they were having, like, a thing. I don't know if it was, like, a ball or some sort of charity thing, I don't know. But she was in the room doing her thing with the Pope, and the Pope was in the room with a bunch of, like, cardinals and regular priests and stuff, and her husband was there for some reason. He shows up every once in a while. I'm not sure what he does. Still, and, like, he walked up to her and was like, I love seeing you in charge of all these men.
Oh, yeah. Or whatever. That's right. Their relationship is everything that I hate.
He is not even, like, remotely interesting.
No. Well, I mean, it depends on how you want to use the word interesting. Because he's definitely going to be shocking and terrible.
He's like, he looks kind of like someone put Mr. Clean through the spin cycle for too long.
And then added a bunch of weight, too, because he's not even, like, you know, she's this lithe, tall, gorgeous, fit woman.
And oh, he's yeah, just kind she's of, gorgeous, yeah. And he's just a blob man, a potato.
Yeah, He is a potato of a human, especially next to her. So then we have Cardinal Spoletta, and he really wants JP3's attention, and he tries to, like, give him a Bentley.
The Bentley that those nuns are mad about.
Exactly. And JP is unmoved. Remember, this guy is so freaking wealthy before all of this. He's like, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't want this. It's like, what could I possibly give in return? I am a merely Primus. So he's like, I am not into the whole bribe thing, man. He thinks he has an in because he and JP3 were at seminary together.
Yeah.
And he's like, look, I can be an informant. And if you don't take me up on my offer, I can out you because I know about your box. What's in the box, John? And JP3 calls him out for being a sexual deviant. And oh my God, is this man a sexual deviant? So, you know, maybe don't try to blackmail the Pope.
Yeah.
It's not good.
You should think before you speak, sir.
Yeah, I don't like any of that. And then we have Voiello again. And Voiello is being made aware of the nuns' request, finally, that the nuns actually wanted to talk to him. And Don Cavallo is like, oh, I've done you wrong. I should resign. And it's a dog and pony show, really. We learn that the nuns are on strike and they've occupied the Sistine Chapel. And this is ironic because we know that, you know, generally they go, oh, well, whatever, the nuns. We don't really worry about them. But the nuns are on strike, so nobody's doing laundry, which is awful. It's, yeah, it's just very, all very sexist. But Voiello gets together with the Mother Superior and Sister Lisette, and he gives them the money that they were looking for. And he's like, okay, we can stop all of this now, right? And they're like, no, what we want now is not what we wanted before. Because now they're like, look, you have dismissed us. You have completely disregarded us. So now we want social, moral, and economic respect, more active ministry. They want to administer sacraments, protection from unwanted behavior from the men. And it's all the things that are currently being discussed in church ministry about women. Like, why can't women be involved in this practice? And why has it taken so long for women to have some position of influence within the church? And Voyelle's like, yeah, sure. Why don't you just give me a written account of everything you want? And the sisters wisely are aware that this is a trap, and that Voiello's willing to stand off with them and dismisses them very easily. And I am disappointed in him. I was very unhappy with Voiello in this moment. They're like, okay, well, we're going to continue striking. And he goes, ah, oh, it's fine. The priest will learn to cook and clean. And then he, like, insists that they kiss his ring. And
it was gross.
Voiello, you're supposed to be better. What would Sister Mary think? He's not thinking about that. Then we have this, like, little moment still attached to what's going on with the nuns, with the nun that is personally attending on JP3. It's the same nun with the hearing aid from season one.
Yeah.
She says that she's not joining the protest because she's decided to believe in him. And JP3 is a lot more open to their cause. He says, oh, I'm told they want respect. And he asks if she needs respect, and he says that she's always had it, right? Like that this is, at least in her case, they are treating her properly. But that should be extended to all of the nuns. And then we go back to Esther. She bailed out on sleeping with the deformed, physically disabled individual, and now Creepy Dude is mad at her and criticizing her and condemning her for not going through with it. And he's the worst, and she's pathetic. So I hate everything about this. It just made me really, really angry. And then we kind of get this interlude with JP3. He's finally gonna go to Venice to visit Pius. And I have here in big capital letters, and I wonder if you pick up on this because you're usually very observant about scene work. Big letters here. Bad green screen.
Oh, yes, on the boat. Yes, that green screen was awful.
That was so bad. Like, this is a high-level production, and that green screen was the worst I've ever seen.
Sometimes, okay, so, like, there are times where it's plainly obvious that certain directors and producers haven't figured out that we all have 4K screens.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're still acting as though we're still watching everything on, like, a blurry tube television.
It's true. And it was real bad this time. And I have to say, just as a side note, I actually hate 4K. I hate watching things in 4K because it's too hyper-realistic and it makes it hard for me to watch things.
Yeah, and you don't have, like, a gaming system that goes to the TV, right?
No.
Okay, so here's another thing that we have on constantly. We always have our TV on in game mode, so okay. It runs everything through a higher frame per second, right? So it makes things look awful. Like, wow, sitcoms? They look like someone fucking did them in their, like, bedroom with their phone.
Yes, it's like old, like, bad old, like soap operas.
Yeah, like,
but everything
looks like a bad old soap opera. Yes.
I hate that. I hate it so much. Like, I'm not a big nitpicker for resolution at the best of times. Like, look, if something's coming out in, like, HD rip or 480p, and it's something I want to watch, I'm gonna fucking watch it. But my husband's all like, why didn't you download the 720 or the 1080? And I'm like, because I don't care.
Because, yeah, whatever. I will watch the DVD quality. Like, anything lower than DVD quality, I'm out. But, like, DVD quality up, I'm all right.
As long as we're not talking about a camera in a movie theater, I will watch it. I don't give a shit.
I cannot do movie theater cams.
Beyond that, I don't care. Like, I will watch it. Doesn't matter how, like, bad it is. I'm not paying attention to that at all. So the fact that I wrote big, bad green screen on this means it was that bad.
But also, like, he's on the Venetian, you know, canals, which are now, like, weirdly clear.
So clear.
Dolphins aren't there. That was a hoax. Thanks, Internet. No,
dolphins have never been there.
Dolphins don't live there.
No. Not like that, anyways.
It's not where dolphins go. You know what? They could have been like, there's a polar bear in the Venetian canals. And that'd have been just as interesting. And
St. Corona's the patron saint of epidemics.
Oh my god, it's still happening, I know.
Well, now she will be, because popular acclaim is how this shit works.
Yeah.
So from here on in, she absolutely will be a patron saint of resisting an epidemics, but none of that is historically verifiable from before the last couple months.
She's gonna be all Saint Gene 4 about it. Treasures and blah-de-blah and resisting play. Where'd this come from?
Yeah, I mean, hello, we already have a saint for that. Saint Roche, you all heard about it.
With his sexy leg wound. Why are you forgetting about his sexy leg wound?
I know, I did a whole thread about it so that people wouldn't forget about St. Roche and his sexy leg wound, so. So yeah, JP3 is in Venice, he goes and he prays with Pius, they say he's not gonna wake up, and he goes to where the idolaters, the cult of Pius, are hanging out outside of the hospital that he's in, right? And my question, again, in big capital letters, is what are these people doing with their lives that they're just here nonstop? Because he's supposed to have been in a coma for, like, fucking 9 months already, and they're just there every day. They sleep there. They don't seem to leave for anything.
Yeah, someone must go bring them coffee or something.
It just really doesn't make any sense, really. They can't have a sit-in that long. Even Occupy Wall Street didn't last that long. So, this is because this continues to happen, and time is clearly passing, and they are still there, and, like, they're in the same clothes.
It's like, I don't know, like a video game quest, or like D&D when you're not running on an actual calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, things just wait for you to show up and trigger them.
Yep, exactly. And they're waiting, to be triggered, so.
In so many ways.
Right? And then the Pope walks up and blesses the girl in red. And he's like, okay, you know, and she grabs his arm and whispers in his ear. And he walks away all, like, non-aggressively. So she has been triggered in that moment. And now she'll go back to waiting with, you know, the quest exclamation mark above her head or whatever. And then we have this, like, long scene where JP3 is kind of setting himself up for what his papacy is going to look like. He has a conversation with Sophie. He's clearly getting very close with Sophie. They have a lot of conversations, and he wants to know from her that he can be influential in those kind of things. So he confirms her back to her job, confirms Voyella back to his job, takes Gutierrez as an advisor.
Pulls in this new man I haven't seen yet.
Yes, Spalletta. Spalletta is the personal secretary. He's the one who had the Bentley for him.
Oh, ew.
Yeah.
Old white men. They're all looking the same.
And, like, in private, he tells the Pope that he wanted to be Secretary of the State. You know, like, hey, you've given me this position because I wanted a position, but this position isn't quite enough. And then they talk about the death of Francis II, and they both kind of agree that he was probably killed by Voyello. And Spoleta's like, but look, hey, you don't really want that to, you don't want to look into that. You want to let it go, because if you're set up against Voyello, that's a problem. He's at, I think, John Paul III asks what makes him so dangerous. And Spalletta says no one knows, but every time someone opposes Voyello, they have ended up in pieces. Literally. So. And then we have Don Cavallo is getting info on the nuns. So he finds out that, like, some of the nuns are molesting some of the other nuns. There's a kleptomaniac.
Some nuns are in love.
Yeah. That one who was in love with the migrant boy, her name is Katerina, I believe, and Faisal is the name of the migrant. And also Sister Lisette, the one who has been the most vocal this whole time, she's on social media trying to rally support. So Voyello shuts down the Wi-Fi, and there's this whole standoff about the Wi-Fi, and he's like, great, I will bring the Wi-Fi back if you stop striking. And Lisette's like, we will stop striking when we can meet with the Pope. And Voyello's like, no. So that's how that goes. And it's still just frustrating, and you totally understand where they're coming from. And then we have Gutierrez is having dinner with Freddy and holding hands. I just want him to be happy.
Yes.
It's a little scene, but it alludes to the fact that Gutierrez is allowing himself to enjoy life a little bit more. And then there's, again, we have this scene that we had a very similar scene in the first season where the Pope and Voyello are meeting with the government, and the government wants to repeal more church laws, the 8-per-1,000 law. The government wants to do it because they need to restructure the finances of the country. It would repeal privileges to the church, and if they go through with it, it would defund the church. And unlike Pius, who got in, like, a pissing match with the prime minister because, oh, look, we're both young and handsome men and are threatened by each other, he's like, yeah, I don't want you guys to fight this. Let's go back to Christian virtues of gentleness and humility and compassion. He says, we must fly high and hold on to the poetry and leave the rhetoric to others, following the Newman principles that he's so well known for. So it seems like he's not going to be pious again. He's going to be the opposite of pious. And even when Voyello's telling him it'll alienate Catholics, then there's this moment where the prime minister shows him something that shocks him. And the prime minister demands, like, no backroom deals and no dishonesty. And we don't know what he saw. And then we're back to Esther, who has a vision of Pius, but in fact, it's not Pius.
No.
She's being molested by the priest at the church she works for. I just wrote ugh, because Esther's just allowing herself to consistently be, like, a victim of circumstance.
Yeah, it's awful.
I hate all of it. So, yeah. And then, you know, it's jumping back and forth a lot. So we have Spalletta. He wants the Minister of Finance to delay the repeal of the law of the 8-per-1,000. He wants to find new revenue sources. You know, he's basically just trying to do all the underhanded things that JP3 doesn't want to do. You know, hey, why don't you appoint Sophie's husband as the head of finance for the Vatican? Ah, there's the rub, right? That's something that's definitely not going to be good for anyone. And then we go back to Gutierrez. And my notes here say, Gutierrez is having the sex. That's all it says. And then he's meeting with the Pope and confessing that he's been having the sex and that you know, Freddy satisfies his body and God satisfies his spirit, but he still feels empty and inadequate.
He's like slowly going through, I don't know why he's trying to tell the Pope a titillating story during confession. That's a little weird.
Yeah.
You could get to the point. Yeah. But it's all interspersed with, like, these scenes of French fries and the hamburgers doing the things that he's describing Freddy doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Yeah, and that whole scene kind of devolves very quickly. Because we then have the Pope turning this moment of confession back to Gutierrez, and he's giving his own confession. And he says, I've taken the first step into sin. Coward that I am, I pretend not to see or know, but I know. And this is kind of a reference to, I think, a number of things. What he's setting up with the financial situation, what he's seeing now that he's in power, maybe the way he feels about things.
His new whatever liaison with the Bentley.
Yeah, well, he didn't take the Bentley, but that guy, yes. Spoletta's definitely man. A big piece of that, for sure. And that whole scene is devolving at the same time that we see Sophie having a glory hole moment with her husband.
That was really weird.
Why do you have a glory hole in your house?
Not to kink shame, but.
It's just, I hate it all. And then, you know, Esther comes back to try and sleep with the deformed man again.
I guess she makes it work.
Yeah, she makes it work for her, I guess. And then the Cult of Pius is still outside of his hospital room. And again, I've written, what do they do with their lives?
Pius leans sideways.
Oh yeah, Pius moves a little bit. This whole time, I know, like, you know, the whole show is gearing up to him waking up. And I just don't want him to.
He can stay asleep.
Yeah, please stay asleep forever. How about just die? So then we get to the end and it's the dancing again. And it is the older cardinal who wants to be with Bernardo. And he has some moves.
Yeah, he's really pretty dancing. Good at the dancing. And then a bunch of other cardinals are like, why are you doing this in our space?
He, like, smoothly comes out of it and just, like, walks away, and they're just there. And I love it. I love it. They've clearly just told people to, like, dance at the end of the scenes to make these things happen. That is by far the best ones. And I loved it, so. It's a good point to end on, I think.
Yes. And now I have to watch two more.
You have to watch two more. Continue. So we will be back with more Bitching Popes soon, as soon as Fry has watched two more episodes. You'll get there. I promise there are some payoffs that you've been waiting for.
Okay, fair. I will search for those in the midst of the rest of this nonsense.
Hot garbage. Right. Yes. So on that note, we can say thank you and goodbye.
Bye.